Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. A special guest today is PGA Tour player Sam Stevens. Sam recently played in the U.S. Open and made the cut at Los Angeles Country Club. He's also a former Oklahoma State golfer, and he comes from a true golfing family, as you'll see. He's a devout Christian who believes his faith in God allows him the freedom to be his best. He's smart, he's funny, and extremely talented. He's really just an easy guy to pull for. Enjoy every drop of this interview. All right, Better Than I Found It listeners, join me in welcoming former Oklahoma State golfer and current PGA Tour player Sam Stevens to the podcast. Sam, really appreciate you making the time to join me today.
Yeah, absolutely, Coach. Thanks for having me on. Glad we could finally get it done.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do this for quite a while, and actually, this is pretty good timing, actually, because you're headed to the U.S. Open today. That's a pretty big deal. Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm in the airport in Wichita right now. I was afraid that wouldn't be able to find a quiet spot, but thankfully no one flies through Wichita, so it's empty.
Well, maybe that's your genius. You connect out of an airport that where nobody is, right?
That's right. It's like flying private.
Yeah, it really is like flying private, but you're not flying private. So, hey, I have a question for you. The big elephant in the room this week would be the, and I didn't prepare you for this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. It's the obviously PGA Tour LIV merger, which I know came as a sort of a shock to all of the players. I've talked to a few players. I'm not smart enough to really know what has actually happened. And I don't know what you're comfortable with saying, or just, can you tell me where we are, where pro golf is? I just don't know myself.
I probably can't give you a very good answer either. It's incredible that they kept it quiet. I mean, nobody knew, like nobody. That's, and you know, normally that's these days, that's not how things work. But I was flying home from sectionals and I was sitting next to this guy on the plane and we landed in Wichita and turned our planes off airplane mode. And he's like, "Hey, look at this." And it was, I mean, the first time I had even heard that that was a possibility. But yeah, I think that I don't know how much you've talked about it on this show, but I think I have a general grasp of where you stand on the LIV stuff. And I feel like we're in a similar position. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's all going to be speculation over the next 6 months about what's going to happen, how it's going to be, how they're going to reintegrate the players and all that stuff. But I mean, yeah, it's great. I think it's good that all the best golfers have the opportunity to play together again. That's good. And I think it's great that there's a lot of money flying around. That's not a bad thing necessarily, but we'll see. As long as we're not playing team golf 6 months from now, then I can pretty much deal with anything else that comes along with it.
Well, and there's been so much conflicting, confusing information on social media. And the fact that the players themselves didn't know until you know, this week is kind of crazy. But I guess we'll just see how that plays out. I know that if you have a place to play and you're still competing against the best players, it'll find a way to work itself out, don't you think?
Yeah, eventually it'll all hopefully get back to somewhat normal and everyone can be playing and hopefully the PGA Tour keeps on existing for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I was going to ask that question because I know it's not effective immediately. It's a little ways down the road. Your schedule won't change at all based upon any of this, will it?
No, that was one of the first questions I had. I didn't know if that meant, you know, at the Travelers Championship after the U.S. Open, if there were going to be 30 more guys that were in the field or how it was all going to work. But I think at a minimum, it'll be the start of next season, next January, where those guys have the opportunity to come back. And what I've heard, you've probably read and looked into it more than I have, but what I've heard is that it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to reapply for membership and pay a fine and then serve a suspension. It's kind of, you know, again, it's all kind of hearsay and speculation, but we will see what happens. It's an interesting time to be a part of golf. That's for sure. That's about all I know.
It is. And I don't know how it's going to change or what it's going to look like, but I do know one thing. Good golf is always, it always feels good. It doesn't matter where you're playing. If in the sectionals where you didn't make a bogey to qualify for the U.S. Open, you shot 13 under par, 65, 62. I mean, that'll feel good regardless of what tour you're on, wherever you are.
That's exactly right. They can change golf. They can let you wear shorts and play music while you're playing, but low man still wins, right?
Low man still wins. And you said play music. That reminds me of the 2018 NCAA championship, which we're going to talk about here in a little while. Something Mike Holder did that I never expected, but it was kind of interesting. So I look back on this, Sam. I've been wanting to do this talk with you for a while. This podcast, I'm still an active, competitive, competing coach, you know, in college golf. But when I started this podcast, it was to kind of keep Baylor golf sort of relevant, maybe to do, you know, just to talk a little bit about. But honestly, it's kind of morphed into something that I really enjoy. And I enjoy getting people like you on the podcast. Some people don't know you're part of a very small fraternity. And that is the guys I recruited to Oklahoma State, but never got to coach. And that would be, it is, that's a small fraternity. It's three kids in the 2013 class and four of you in the 2014. But anyway, so I did. I recruited you to Oklahoma State. And we're going to talk about that, but I'm going to ask a question. Do you remember seeing me at Jimmy Austin? You were not yet 13. You were 12 and three quarters at the U.S. Junior qualifying 2009.
I do. I'm pretty sure I was playing with Hayden Wood.
You were that day.
Yeah. I remember we were both, I think maybe was Will Kropp caddying for Hayden?
Or, he was. Yeah. He was there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were both really young, and we were about three or four holes behind. And, you know, it's 36 holes back then, back in the good old days. And, they made us, we had no break. We had to go straight from 18 green back to 1 feet. It was about 100 degrees outside. And I remember we got to about the 20th hole of the day, and Hayden Wood was walking down the fairway. He had his legs about as far apart as he could get them because he was chafing so bad. back when Hayden was a little bowling ball of a man. He's thinned out. He's a good looking kid now, but back in those days, he had a little extra weight.
He was a little round kid, wasn't he?
Yeah, that might have been the first time I'd ever met Hayden, but we ended up, you know, going to Oklahoma State, same class all 4 years. And I actually played golf with him yesterday up in Wichita, so we're still good buds.
That's crazy, crazy times. So, in fact, Hayden was with one of my former players, Braden Bailey, last night, and Braden was going to play the Monday for the Corn Ferry then.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Well, I saw you on the, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I saw Braden a couple, he's been caddying a little bit, I think.
He has for Chandler Phillips. So he's playing, and he was going to caddy a little for Chandler earlier in the year, and Chandler slipped up and won a golf tournament.
Yeah.
So I think Braden kind of wants to help him get that card while still playing a little bit himself. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, in 2009, I decided I wanted to recruit you that day, but two things were conflicting me right at that moment. One was you were playing. The first time I saw you was at Jimmy Austin Golf Club. And that was Ryan Hibble's first day to recruit. And so I thought,
okay.
And your dad had played some of his college golf at the University of Oklahoma. So I was looking at this as a major uphill battle, major uphill battle. Was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, my mom went to OU as well. So yep. We had a lot of Sooner blood. I was, I cried more after OU football games growing up when they lost more than I did anything else. But yeah, I was always a huge OU fan growing up, but yeah, you know, something about something about that hallway at Oklahoma State just spoke to me, I guess.
Yeah, that hallway. I remember when Mike Holder was doing the plans for the clubhouse back in late 2000, early 2000. Well, it was late 2000. And I looked at the dimensions of that hallway and I said, Mike, that's a pretty big hallway. He says, McGraw, we got lots of trophies. And so I remember the genesis of that when he said it will be the largest hallway, you know, in the building, and nothing will be bigger. And so I knew I had an uphill battle. You know, I was recruiting a kid who loved the University of Oklahoma, and University of Oklahoma just hired a pretty good golf coach, and he hadn't proven himself at that point, but I knew he would be good. And so I'm gonna say this too: for the modern day, you were the most low maintenance prospect I have ever seen. I mean,
Really?
you didn't expect phone calls. You didn't, you know, you weren't. It wasn't. So many kids seem like, if you don't follow me enough holes, or if you don't follow me more holes than Coach XYZ over there, you're not coming. I'm not going to your school. So you just felt really low maintenance to me, were you?
Well, maybe I was just in shock that you were actually recruiting me to begin with. I didn't want to screw it up. I don't know. I never really thought about who was following me, or never really worried that much about it. Just focused on playing good golf, and I was actually going through some old emails from when I was in high school, and I remember, I don't know how long it was before I committed, but I was right after I'd come on an unofficial visit maybe, and you had sent an email just like, "Hey, thanks for coming down. Had a lot of fun, like showing you everything." And then you just started, I can't remember exactly how you said it, but it was like, if you want to be a part of, and then you just started listing, the first team All-Americans and Peter Uihlein, Kevin Tway, Bob Tway, Scott Verplank. And I was just like, yep, that's where I'm going to school. It's like, there's no other place in the country that there's no other coach in the country that could send an email that looks like that. And I guess, Oklahoma State's an easy sell, but
Well, I was going to ask you the question, what stood out? It sounds like to me that may have been the moment when you decided, you know, that, and didn't that hallway have something to do with it as well?
yeah, I mean, it's impossible to not be, as a high schooler, just walking, you walk in there. I mean, they're running out of room in the All-American wall these days, but you walk in there and you just see all these great players and all these great teams and the dozens of guys they've put on tour. And there's a couple schools that are like that, but man, Oklahoma State was always yeah, even though I was always an OU fan even through high school, it's just like, growing up, we'd go out to Prairie Dunes and watch the Big 12, watch Ricky Fowler, and it was just like there was something about you and something about Oklahoma State that always was just kind of mystifying and attractive to me. And maybe it was that I grew up an OU fan and I wanted to try something different, but man, Oklahoma State is a it's an awesome place. One of the best decisions I've ever made for sure.
Well, between you and Taylor Gooch, he grew up a bigger OU football fan, I think, than even you were. Those are two of my better
Okay.
recruiting jobs. I need to figure out what I did to get Taylor and to get you to come to Stillwater, because if I could figure that deal out, I would continue it here in Waco, Texas. I just haven't cracked the
You'd
code
never
like that.
miss.
Yeah, you'd never miss. Well, I did have some good conversations with your dad on the phone during that. During that recruiting process, and he was convincing me that you were low maintenance, that you didn't need to be followed every week, and you didn't, but I still didn't believe it. So I did follow you quite a bit. Glad you came on that visit. So, so before we talk about your time at OSU, which, like I said, you were part of a fraternity of young players that I recruited but didn't get to coach. You had two really incredible influences on your life, but certainly on your golf life, and that would be your grandfather, Johnny Stevens, who played the tour in the late 60s, and your dad, Charlie, who played a little bit on the Korn Ferry tour in the early 90s, and he played collegiate golf as well. So, I mean, they had to have had an influence on your game, and if so, what would you say were the biggest things that they each influenced you in golf?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I tell people that, they ask, what did they teach you? And it's like, it's a hard question to answer because I can't think of something that they didn't teach me, when it comes to golf. But I think that the biggest thing, and they're both pretty, old school, I'd say, but just that what hard work actually looks like, And my dad would tell me, a lot of people think they're working hard, but there's not very many people that are actually working hard. And I think that just, from a young age, it was never, my dad was never like overbearing, like making it miserable to be at the golf course. But he was like, hey, if we're gonna, and I played every other sport, growing up. And he was like, hey, if we're gonna do this, we're gonna work hard while we do it, And I think that that's probably a pretty fine line, a pretty hard, balance to have. But it's maybe a little easier for him because I did love being at the golf course so much. But there were times, as I got older when I was in high school and stuff, that maybe I would, want to do something that would be more social with my friends or, whatever it was. And he always, my dad in particular, but my grandpa too, they were always just on me about, working hard. And if you're going to do something, you better be doing it the right way, and you better be putting the time in. And I think that that would be the biggest lesson that they've taught me over the years. And I think that, again, it's not just a golf thing. It's not just a sports thing. It's a life thing, and if, same thing with your family and, trying to find that balance now with being on the road so much and still being a good dad and a good husband. It's like, you can kind of look back and just the way my parents, I'm super lucky the way my parents raised me and just to work hard and to do things the right way as often as possible. And I would say that that's probably the biggest thing that they taught me outside of, just actually how to play golf.
Well, they did a good job with that. Both of them were great players themselves. So I think it's an advantage when you have not only the wisdom that they could give you, but then they can actually help you with the golf part of it too. And that you probably don't have any one single thing. There has to be so many. It's just all the time infusing you with knowledge about how to play the game. What age were you when you first beat your grandpa? And what age were you when you first beat your dad? Have any idea?
I don't remember when I first beat my grandpa. It was probably because I grew up in Fort Worth, Texas. We moved to Wichita when I was 11 years old. So it had been right before, about a year before you watched me at Jimmy Austin. But I probably beat my grandpa pretty quick after we moved to Wichita. Maybe he was still pretty good for a long time. He's still good. He's getting older now. But I think I beat my dad when I was maybe 13. It was 12 or 13. We were playing at Wichita Country Club, and I'd maybe beat him on 9 holes one time, but he was like, that doesn't count. And maybe whether we had a couple of times where I was getting close, but he would always win. But I remember my grandpa actually lives on the Wichita Country Club, and we had started like just right outside my grandpa's gate, and so we weren't even finishing on 9. I think we were finishing on number 7, and I can't remember what I shot. Maybe it was 70 or 69, but I think I beat him by one shot. And he wasn't upset. He wasn't overly emotional or proud or anything, but I remember when I did it. And yeah, it was a special moment. I think they ended up doing, like, they wrote an article in the Wichita Eagle about it, like, a couple days later, which is, or maybe it was a few months later, I don't know. It's way overblown, but he was a pretty good player. He still is. And I get him more often now, so that's good. He beat up on me his fair share for the first 12 years of my life. The next
Before this interview, I asked him if there's any interesting stories. He said, "Nah, I can't really come up with anything there." But I said, "Well, I hope you're doing well." He said, "I'm doing great, except my golf is terrible." So he's probably not playing enough.
Yeah, he's working too much. He needs to live a little, go play some golf.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I didn't get to coach you at OSU, but you got to go there. You played on some really good teams. And it's not a given just because you're a really good junior player, high school player, amateur player, that you're going to make the top 5 there. And you were in and out of the lineup pretty much your whole career. I know you played a lot of tournaments at Oklahoma State, but you didn't play every tournament. So I struggle with this one as a coach, because how do you keep kids happy? How do you keep them motivated? How do you keep them excited? or believing there is hope when you don't get to play necessarily every tournament. And that's the case pretty much on every team that has more than five players. So how did you handle that? And then we'll talk about the 2018 team.
Yeah, I would say that it was tough for sure. And there were times where I was, you know, frustrated. I think that, you know, I mean, you're just 18 or 19 or 20, you know, you're pretty young. And you think, well, I'm getting the short end of the stick on these, you know, qualifying deals or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, you know, Coach Bratton, Coach Gutz, Coach Dar, whoever it was, they were trying to make the best decision for the team. And it was, you know, I just, for whatever reason, I just wasn't good all the time. When I was good, I felt like I was pretty dang good. But man, Carson Creek can beat you up a little bit. And that was definitely the case for me. And I was, even when I wasn't playing well, I always felt like I had a chance, you know, to make the team, which was probably worse because I knew that I could play bad and maybe sneak into that five spot. So I didn't really worry about getting better. I just worried about, you know, getting it in between the junk and maybe having a chance to go to the tournament, which was probably the worst thing that I did in college. You know, instead of having like a long-term goal about getting better, it was just about how can I, you know, get to the tournaments. And that's probably why I hung out around that, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 spot my entire career. But you know, that's just, like I said, you're 18, 19. You don't really know what you're doing. Sometimes you don't know what the goal is and how to get better. And that was definitely the case for pretty much my entire 4 years at Oklahoma State. But I mean, there's just, you know, a place like that, there's a lot of good players, and that's what you sign up for. You know, like I said, that you started listing the names, and that was, you know, when in that email you sent me, and that's how it was when I was there. There are more names, you know, on the emails that Coach Bratton is sending now, you know, and those are the guys I was playing with. But I do remember the first round of ball in my freshman year, you know, like, I mean, it's like master year freshman, you know, it's like, and at Carson Creek. And, you know, I think, I don't know what it was when you were the coach there, but maybe you break par and you get your home state golf bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being so nervous, just sure they're going to hit it and junk on everything. And somehow I got around and I shot 2 under 70. So I'm like, over it. I'm going to get my bag the first time out. So Chris Ventura, who was my roommate for all 4 years, he was in the group behind me. And we were all standing around the green, and he finished. And, you know, I'm over the moon about my 200 par 70. And he's kind of a soft-spoken guy. And, you know, I asked him, you know, how'd you play? And he kind of mumbles. He's, you know, like, you know, 70 or whatever. And I'm like, oh, he shot 70. We tied. And so, you know, maybe the last group comes in. We're all standing there. And Coach Bratton, you know, starts reading off the scores. He's like, Chris, great plan, 65. And Chris had said 7 under, you know, but he had mumbled. So I thought that we had tied. And I think we were playing for, like, maybe dinner, or who got to sit on the big couch when we got back to the dorm room. And I was like, dang, 65. I was like, I don't know if I can shoot that out here ever. I don't know, with my best stuff, you know, maybe I psyched myself out a little bit, but I don't know if I ever shot 65 out there. In fact, I'm pretty confident that I didn't, but we had some good players, and that's just the way it was, you know, and you had to play good. Maybe not so much my freshman year weren't as good. That you just had to, you had to play dang good to make the top five, and that was the way it is. And, you know, hopefully that can be the way it is for a long time at Oklahoma State.
Well, whenever a kid is worried about making the team, and it is a syndrome, they just try to make the fifth spot, and then they just try to protect the fifth spot. The truth is, you should be trying to figure out how to play your best golf, whatever that is, but. You did have some great teams. Right. Let's talk about that 2018 team, which had Matthew Wolf, Victor Hovland, Zach Beauchieu, Christopher Ventura, Austin Eckroat. I mean, wow. And then there's you and Hayden Wood trying to figure out how to get a spot. And that's pretty rough. And you guys were hosting nationals that year at Carson Creek.
Oh, yeah. We had, Brendan Jelly and Stratton Nolan, who'd won the Big 12 a couple years before, had been an All-American. Nick Heinen. I mean, we were good all the way through. It was incredible, to be a part of. It really was. And I don't think I played a tournament all year. I'd played really poorly in the fall, but then I snuck into the lineup like right at the last to play Big 12s, and I was just like, I just have to not embarrass myself at Big 12s, and so naturally I played terrible, and then we qualified again for regionals, and Austin got the spot, and probably better that he got it. He's not he's got a little different mindset, or had a little bit different mindset than I did. He was always fearless and couldn't care less about if he shot 85 or 62, and he played great at regionals and nationals, and everyone played great at nationals, and we won the stroke play by a little bit, and then
Yeah, they just ran through the match play, and I think we beat Alabama in all five matches, and it was just, you coached the Nationals out there, I think in 2011 or 2010, just all those people out there. That was about the coolest thing.
I remember I was out there with Kelsey, my wife, after they Matt had made that putt on 15 to win, and we were both crying our eyes out. I mean, it was a really
Cool experience. Something that was really cool to be a part of, even not being on the top five.
I saw Willie Wood watching that week in the gallery as well, and Hayden wasn't in the top five either. So it was obvious that the team was so good, you had a lot of really good players sitting on the sidelines. But I remember watching it on television. We had missed the cut that week, and we're already back in Waco. So you turned pro, I guess, not too long after that championship. Is that correct?
Well, I stayed amateur through the summer, hoping to qualify for the US Amateur. Didn't happen. But I turned pro after the Canadian Amateur that August. I actually forgot to sign up for pre-qualifying the fall of 2018, pre-qualifying for the Q School. And so I had to go up to the only way to get through pre-qualifying was to make a cut in a Canadian event or a Korn Ferry event. So I went up to the last Canada Tour event, Monday'd in, and I made the cut. So I got to the dead. That gave me a little time to sign up for first stage. And then I played good at first stage, made it through, and I was playing good at second stage. And I was like, oh man, it's just meant to be. And then I played terrible the final round. It's like, oh, this probably cost myself an extra $5,000 by making that cut in Canada.
Well, so your journey's been a little different when you look at it. It's been a little different, but you did play mini tour golf. So, how long did you play mini tour golf before you got on the Korn Ferry?
I played so in 2019 I played in Latin America and then some mini tour stuff in the States when I wasn't playing down there, and then did make it through Q School in 2019, so I went back down to Latin America in 2020, but then no one played golf for the whole year basically, and so I had to play Latin America and then a tour called the All Pro Tour, which is just a mini tour in the States. It's probably the best mini tour. So I played there in 2019, in 2020, and in 2021 as well. And then played well in Latin America in 2021, which got my Korn Ferry card. So three full years playing the mini tours, and then I got my Korn Ferry card.
Wow. That's, I think I remember it being about a year and a half, but it actually was 3 years. So maybe it was longer than I thought. But once you got your Korn Ferry card, there's a moment at Victoria National that was pretty special, I think, if I'm correct, where you sort of were taking notes in your phone. Is that correct?
So I take notes, or I started taking notes during 2020, or at the end of 2019, kind of just before tournaments and stuff, and just kind of swing thoughts and just mental, how I was feeling, just in general, life, golf, whatever it was, and I had played well the Corn Ferry season, but hadn't finished in the top 25 of the regular season, and then had played okay in the Corn Ferry finals, where they gave out an additional 25 cards. But then at Victoria National, I scraped by the cut, you know, by maybe one or two shots, and then I shot 62 on Saturday, and then I just went from like having no chance to get my card to basically all I needed to do was just kind of get it to the house on Sunday. I just remember being so emotional, and so I just started taking notes again and kind of just trying to be as, I'm not exactly trying to not put too much pressure on myself and trying to keep it all in perspective about, you know, where I was at, because 24 hours before I wasn't worried about getting my tour card or, you know, maybe moving up to the next level. I was just trying to play good on the weekend, and then I shot 62, and it was like all of a sudden I was like thinking about it and worrying about it. Yeah, I'd go to bed very early that night, but I was just taking notes about, you know, trying to keep perspective and you know, a few things about, you know, what I was trying to do with my swing. But yeah, just trying to calm myself down. I started listening to some sermons and, you know, trying to get my mind in a spot that was more not thinking so much about golf, but thinking about some other things. And I don't know, you know, it's not that it helped me or you know, calm me down at all, but yeah, the notes, it's just something that I've been doing, and I think is worthwhile. It's kind of cool to look back on, you know, almost a year later and see what you're thinking and stuff like that.
You know, I was going to ask you that question because journaling has always been such a big part of my coaching career. I've always loved journaling and putting down things that work, things that I want to remember. But like for you, in a low time or when you might be in a valley, it might really be valuable to go back and read what you were saying to yourself when you were having some great things happen. I mean, do you refer to those notes occasionally?
The notes from when I was playing poorly, is that what you're saying?
Either one or both. Poorly, great. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's some of them that I, you know, basically could recite from memory, you know, cause I've gone back and, you know, maybe it was from a week that I played really well, and I've just gone back and read it so many times just to think about, you know, where I was at mentally or what I was trying to do. And I can, you know, those swing thoughts don't always necessarily work, you know, a year down the road, but it's I'd say it's been much more beneficial kind of on the mental side of just like, you know, seeing how when you're playing good golf, or I'm sure it's this way, you know, if you feel like you're doing a good job of coaching, just like how at ease you are and how like you're just at peace with what happens. Like you might be playing really good golf and hit a terrible shot, but you're like, oh, it's no big deal. But then when you're playing bad and you look at the notes, it's like, I'm rage, you know, rage journaling, you know, it's like, yeah, so I go back and look all the time, and I try and take notes every week just to kind of stay on top of it. And it's kind of fun to go back and look at, you know, my mindset, or, you know, being nervous about silly things, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And now, you know, just I've been lucky enough to play some good golf, and just thinking about, you know, just how much I've grown in my golf and in my life. It's kind of fun to go back and reflect on.
Absolutely. Like the third place finish at Corrales Punta Cana, and then the second place finish at the Valero Texas Open. Those were back-to-back weeks. I mean, you've got to have some good notes from those 2 weeks.
Yeah, they were pretty good. I unfortunately didn't when we were driving back from San Antonio, we missed our flight. My wife and family were down there. We missed our flight from San Antonio back to Wichita, so we had to drive back that night, Sunday night. It was like a 9-hour drive, and everyone was asleep because it was like 2 in the morning. But I was just talking into my phone. And you know how sometimes you talk into your phone, it doesn't pick up like the right words. So I'm trying to decipher sometimes what I was trying to say in that notes in, or in those notes. But yeah, that was those were fun weeks. And yeah, just kind of two very different weeks. Just Corrales, I was kind of up towards the top of the leaderboard the whole time, and played fine on Sunday, but just got passed. And then at Valero, I I had played pretty well the whole week, but was kind of maybe an eighth or ninth going into the final round, and then played really well to kind of have a chance to win. So it was kind of interesting to just the different, you know, the way you handle things and the way you think about, you know, it's so much easier to go and run something down than to try and hold on to it. Kind of like that fifth spot, you know, on a golf team. It's, you know, it's way easier to be the 10th guy and you're going out and qualifying and you just try and play as good as you can versus, you know, if you're playing for two or three spots and, you know, you're right there and you're just trying to hold on. So maybe I should take note of that and be thinking about that more often. If I have a, you know, get up near the lead, but yeah, it's the notes and journaling from those weeks is pretty fun. Those are awesome weeks. It was kind of kickstart my season a little bit.
Definitely did. You'll have many more in my opinion. But one of the things that's really appealing to me about your career is you personally, your Christian faith and how it navigates your every step you take and your journey. You know, you're a professional golfer, but you're not defined by that. So talk about how your Christian faith has really, really helped you keep perspective and keep this journey going forward in golf.
Yeah, I think that it's obviously, you know, the biggest part of my life. And it's, you know, it's hard. This is a, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's more hard than if you're a high level, you know, business type or you're playing a different sport or whatever, but golf is, you know, it's such a selfish game. You know, it's such a me, you know, how can I, you know, perform best? How can I maximize my time? And it's, you know, I've kind of caught myself just getting into this a little bit of, you know, wanting to just like, you know, make myself not necessarily happy, but like, you know, I feel like a responsibility to play well because I have these opportunities, you know, whatever it is, you know, getting into bigger tournaments or whatever, or, you know, having an opportunity to play for more money. So it's like, well, now I need to have more of my own time so that I can be ready. And the Christian faith is just not that at all. You know, it's how to be selfless and how to, you know, in my case, you know, be able to come home and love on my wife and my kids, you know, and be a good leader and a good father. And, you know, not just be at the golf course trying to, you know, not that it's a bad pursuit to try and be the best golfer in the world, but like, you know, compared to being a good father, it falls way short, you know? And so I think that, you know, it's easy, again, a selfish game, easy to kind of fall into that, but, you know, just constantly reminding myself and going into the Word and surrounding myself with, you know, guys that kind of hold me accountable has been a huge part, you know, of the last few years. And my wife too, she's a rock star and she's helped me a lot, kind of on that front. And yeah, it can definitely be hard. And there's a lot of temptation to be selfish and a lot of temptation to think about myself. But I think that, yeah, if I'm doing a good job with it, it's because of my faith. You know, it's not because of I'm just such a good person. You know, it's because this the Lord has, you know, kind of moved my heart into a direction where I can be a little less selfish.
That's actually beautiful and very well said. I appreciate you sharing that. So every young player has a conundrum, if you will, to find a caddy that's just right. A caddy that can help, you know, move you along the path. You have a childhood buddy, mm-hmm. Will Dennis, who is on your bag. And I know that you guys knew each other from when you were growing up in Fort Worth, but describe his importance, you know, having him on the bag. Why is it a big value for you, especially a guy that comes from such a golf background?
Yeah, so I actually, when I got my Korn Ferry card, he wasn't caddying for me. He had kind of been toying around with maybe playing professionally, had never really fully committed to it, and then he decided to get into some wealth management stuff. So he was kind of a guy that I always thought that maybe he would be a good caddy. You know, we played a ton growing up together, and then I actually moved back to Fort Worth after I graduated from Oklahoma State. So, and we had played, you know, countless rounds together. And I thought, well, he seems like, you know, we gel on the golf course. He knows my game fairly well. Not that that's, you know, something that a caddy necessarily has to have, but but he was working. So when I got my Korn Ferry card, he couldn't come work for me. And so I used a guy from Florida who had caddied for some buddies. He did a great job for me. I used him through maybe 10 or so events on the PGA Tour. And it was just, he's a little bit older, you know, he has a kid and kind of had his own life. And he did a great job, but I thought that maybe it was time to kind of have a guy on the road that, you know, I could go out to dinner with and, you know, maybe relate to a little bit better. So I called him up and he was all about it. He quit his job and he came and caddied for me. And I've played some awesome golf with him on the bag. I think that for me, maybe I'm overselling this, but I don't feel like I need that much, you know, from a caddy. Maybe it's kind of similar in recruiting. Like I didn't feel like I was that high maintenance, and I feel like I'm kind of the same way on the golf course. I don't need someone to tell me what to, you know, what kind of shot to hit or to really walk me through anything. I just need someone there that's like, you know, enjoyable to be with. And I think that Will has kind of the perfect, for me, you know, kind of the perfect combination of, you know, high golf IQ, and he knows what's going on, and because he's caddied, you know, previously for his dad, so he kind of knows what's going on, but also he's, you know, just a buddy. We can talk about anything other than golf walking down the fairway, and having him on the bag, I don't think it's a surprise that I've played some awesome golf with him on the bag. He just, you know, does a good job of kind of keeping me grounded, and like I said, we're not talking about golf. We're talking about all different kinds of things. And it's been cool to have some of these cool experiences with him, you know, playing the PGA and then qualifying for the U.S. Open and having a chance to win at Valero and at Corrales. It's been a lot of fun. We actually, when he was getting ready to come out, I had just played in San Diego and played with Ryan Armour, who had had a similar thing, kind of a friend. I don't know if it was a childhood friend. I'm sorry, I might have said Ryan Armour. I meant Ryan Palmer from Fort Worth. He had had a child that he played for him for 20 years or so. And I'm not sure that I want to play professional golf for 20 years, but just kind of seeing the way they interacted on the course. And then I told Will that, and he was like, yeah, I mean, that seems like, you know, something that could be fun. So it's been awesome. And we have our times where we get into it, but that's the beauty of having a friend on the back. You can get into it and then you can go out to dinner afterwards. You know, it's, yeah. If it's someone you don't know that well, that might not go over as well. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you're headed out to the U.S. Open as we speak. In fact, I've got to let you go here in a couple of minutes. But Los Angeles Country Club, what do you know about it? Have you done any reconnaissance work ahead of time, or what do you know about Los Angeles Country Club?
I know very little. I don't think you would know. You're a historian. Have they ever had a turn? Like nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't have, I haven't done any. Yeah. No recon, nothing. I've seen a couple of videos of balls being dropped in the rough and that's about it. Looks like it's going to be thick, but from what I've heard, it's, you know, it's going to be a really unique US Open, kind of a smaller site, so not as many people are going to be out there, and be kind of a unique feel, is what people have told me. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm sure it'll feel like a U.S. Open to me when I stand up on the first tee. I'm sure I'll be plenty nervous, but it'll be a lot of fun. We'll see. Hopefully it plays hard, and hopefully they don't hold back. I kind of like the carnage, so we'll see what happens.
Well, a lot of people, you know, you obviously played a qualifier for the U.S. Open where way under par was pretty easy to get, but sometimes it's kind of fun to go to a place where par is a good score.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like I played at a place like that for 4 years in college, so I've got plenty of practice trying to bust par.
Well, Sam, I want to wish you the best of luck out there in Los Angeles. This will air the day after you hold the U.S. Open trophy high above your head. So it'll be the next
perfect.
Monday. Yeah. So this is great timing on my part. And I I apologize for the technical difficulties. Those are really on me, but I'm really, really glad we got a chance to talk for an hour. And I just want to wish you the best of luck going forward. You've got a big fan in me.
Hey, thank you, Coach, for having me on. I want to say one more thing. I don't know if this is, it's not even that quick of a thing. Maybe a little bit of a old soul, and so people won't think this is that cool, but you recruited me, and the seven guys, the elite fraternity that you didn't get to coach. And I remember when I heard that you got fired, you called me. I don't know if it was later that day or probably later in the week. You had a lot going on, but you called me and you told me, Sam, you did not make a commitment to play golf for Mike McGraw. You made a commitment to play golf for Oklahoma State. And I know that probably doesn't mean anything to anyone else, but I remember just thinking, wow, that's a very selfless thing to say. And I respected that a lot. And I think, again, not to get up on a soapbox or anything, but that is not the way people think about college athletics anymore.
Yeah.
And I wish it were. It's not. And that's the way it is. That's fine. But again, I know this, you can cut this out of the interview if it's not worth playing, but I just wanted to tell you that I really respected that. And that's kind of the impression I have of you as a guy that is all class. So,
well, thank you very, very much for saying that. And I feel the same about you. So thank you. And I want to get you back on this podcast when you have your first PGA Tour victory, because I want to read what's in your notes on the phone.
I'll call you next week. How about that?
I would love it with that U.S. Open trophy in your hand. So best of luck, safe travels out there, and we'll check you again after that.
All right. Sounds good, Coach. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sam.